you're tuned in to This Week in Palestine, a space where truth stands tall, resistance is sacred, and solidarity is never negotiable. Here, voices from the heart of occupation rise to meet global movements demanding justice, dignity, and liberation. This is not just a broadcast, it's a lifeline between Gaza and the world, between the rubble and the resolve. Each week, we bring you fearless reporting, incisive analysis, and reflections that center Palestinian life in all its depth, defiance, and humanity. We examine the machinery of empire, from the policies that suffocate to the propaganda that distorts, and trace its echoes across borders, from Ferguson to Jenin, refugee camps to classrooms, and Gaza to the global conscience. Before we begin, a brief but important note. The views expressed during this hour belong to our hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WZBC, Boston College, or its Board of Trustees. This is not a space for polite avoidance or sanitized soundbites. It is a space for truth, bold, urgent, and unapologetic. Good morning, good evening, wherever you're tuning in from, thank you for being here. I'm your host, Yara Rashid, and it's a deep and humbling honor to welcome you back to This Week in Palestine. Today is Sunday, October 5th, 2025. Once again, our attention turns to Gaza and the West Bank, lands under siege, where homes lie in ruins, lives are uprooted, and voices struggle to rise above the noise of global indifference. As headlines fade and attention shifts, the truth remains. Families endure relentless displacement. Communities resist with unshakable resolve. And the pursuit of justice remains a testament to the power of human spirit against brutality. And still, one question refuses to fade. How long must a people suffer before the world chooses conscience over convenience, action over apathy? Stay with us as we strip away the silence, uplift resilience, and carry forward the flame of justice. This journey is not mine alone. It's ours. It's shared. It's urgent. And it's sacred.
Sometimes I ask myself, what is the price of speaking the truth? What is the price of criticizing Israel? And what is the boundaries of acceptable discourse? There is a growing unease, one that many feel but few dare to name. It's the sense that in today's political and cultural landscape, you can critique almost any government, any policy, any regime. You can denounce US drone strikes, condemn China's surveillance state, call out Saudi Arabia's repression, or challenge France's colonial legacy. But when it comes to Israel, when it comes to speaking honestly about its treatment of Palestinians, its military campaigns, its apartheid policies, something shifts, the rules change, the room tightens, and suddenly the cost of speech becomes steep. This subject has been drawing my attention more and more, not just because of the violence unfolding in Gaza or the relentless expansion of settlements in the West Bank, but because of the way criticism itself is policed. The way voices are silenced, careers are threatened, and entire movements are smeared for daring to say what so many know to be true, that Israel is not above scrutiny. and that its actions demand accountability. We live in a world where the phrase free speech is tossed around like a badge of honor. Yet, when that speech challenges Zionism, or calls out Israeli war crimes, or even expresses solidarity with Palestinian resistance, it is met with accusations of anti-Semitism, extremism, or incitement. The conflation of criticism of Israel with hatred of Jews is not just intellectually dishonest. It's strategically deployed to shut down debate, to delegitimize dissent, and to protect a state from the consequences of its own policies. This is not about denying anyone's right to safety or self-determination. It's about recognizing that Palestinians too have those rights. It's about refusing to accept a framework where one people's liberation is seen as a threat to another's existence. And it's about challenging the idea that Israel, uniquely among nations, should be shielded from the moral scrutiny that we apply elsewhere. The case of Sergeant First Class Jonathan Estridge is a recent and chilling example. A U.S. Army reservist, Estridge was removed from his full-time role after posting critiques of Israel's actions in Gaza and sharing public tools that track ICE agents. He was labeled a threat to national security, escorted from his workplace, and placed under investigation, not for violence, not for insubordination, but for expressing political views that challenge the status quo. His story is not isolated. From university campuses to newsrooms, from non-profit boards to social media platforms, we see the same pattern: speak out for Palestine and prepare for backlash. Why is this happening? Why is Israel treated as untouchable, even as it drops bombs on refugee camps, bulldozes homes, and enforces a system of racial segregation? Part of the answer lies in geopolitics, the strategic alliance between the U.S. and Israel, the billions in military aid, the shared interests in regional dominance. But part of it is cultural, too. Israel has positioned itself as a moral state, a democracy in a hostile region, a refuge for a people who have endured unspeakable horrors. And while that history matters, it cannot be used as a shield against present-day injustice. Criticizing Israel is not anti-Semitic. It is not hateful. It is not dangerous. What is dangerous is the silencing of truth. What is dangerous is the normalization of apartheid, the erasure of Palestinian suffering, and the criminalization of solidarity. When we allow one state to operate above the law, we erode the very principles we claim to uphold: human rights, international justice, and the dignity of all people. And so the question becomes, what kind of world do we want to live in? One where speech is free only when it flatters power? One where truth is tolerated only when it's convenient? Or one where we can speak honestly even when it's uncomfortable, especially when it's uncomfortable? Palestine is not just a place, it is a mirror. And what we see in it, what we choose to acknowledge or ignore, reveals who we are. Criticizing Israel is becoming a crime at the cost of another people's annihilation. Criticizing is our right, and it is to insist that justice be universal, not selective. And it is to affirm that Palestinian lives are not expendable, not negotiable, and not invisible. The time has come to break the silence, to speak with clarity, to stand with conscience, Because if we cannot criticize power, if we cannot name oppression, then we have already surrendered the future. Excuse me. I stand in full solidarity with Sergeant First Class Jonathan Estridge and his fundamental right to speak truth without fear. His voice matters, and so does ours. We must rally behind him, defend his courage, and demand his immediate reinstatement. No one should be punished for standing against injustice.
When veterans risk arrest to speak truth to power, the least we can do is listen, and the most we can do is act. I stand in unwavering solidarity with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar and Captain Josephine Guilbeault, two courageous veterans who disrupted a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing in Washington, D.C., to denounce what they rightly called U.S. complicity in genocide in Gaza. Their act was not one of disorder. It was one of moral clarity. In a room where silence often protects power, they chose to speak. They stood up, not just as former officers of the United States military, but as human beings refusing to be complicit in the erasure of Palestinian life. Their voices pierced the decorum of the Senate chamber to remind us that behind every policy, every weapons shipment, every diplomatic shield, there are families being bombed, children being buried, and communities fighting to survive. Lieutenant Colonel Aguilar, a retired Green Beret with 25 years of service, and Captain Josephine Guilbeault, a former Army officer and trauma nurse, did what conscience demanded. They called out the hypocrisy of a government that claims to uphold human rights while funding and defending the machinery of occupation. They named the violence for what it is. Not a conflict, not a tragedy, but a systematic campaign of ethnic cleansing. Their arrest was swift. Their message was louder. We must not let their courage be punished in silence. We must amplify their call, demand transparency, and insist on accountability. Their disruption was a form of service. Service to truth, to justice, and to the people of Gaza, whose suffering is too often buried beneath diplomatic language and media distortion. I call on others to join in solidarity with Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Aguilar and Captain Josephine Guilbeault. Let us defend their right to speak, honor their moral stand, and echo their demand. No more complicity. No more silence. No more genocide. I stand in full and unwavering solidarity with every Jewish person who breaks away from Zionism and dares to speak truth, especially voices like Ilan Volkov, whose moral clarity cuts through the noise. When Jewish individuals publicly reject Zionism, they challenge not only a political ideology, but a global system of distortion that equates critique with betrayal. Their courage dismantles the myth that Zionism and Judaism are one and the same, and reminds us that justice knows no borders, no ethnicity, no imposed allegiance. In the following clip from Ilan Volkov, we hear a voice that refuses to be silenced. Volkov speaks not just as a Jew, but as a human being who recognizes the suffering of Palestinians and refuses to let his identity be weaponized in service of oppression. His words are a call to conscience, for Jews and non-Jews alike, to reject the machinery of apartheid, displacement, and militarized nationalism. To stand with anti-Zionist Jews is to honor the long tradition of Jewish resistance to empire, to racism, to state violence.
it is to remember that many of the fiercest critics of Israeli policy are themselves descendants of people who survived genocide and who now refuse to be complicit in another. It is to affirm that solidarity with Palestine is not anti-Semitism. It is a stand for universal dignity. So let us listen. Let us amplify. Let us protect and uplift these voices, because they are not just brave, they are essential. And let us say clearly, we stand with Ilan Volkov. We stand with every Jewish person who chooses justice over nationalism, truth over silence, and liberation over fear.
In my heart, there is great pain now, every day, for months. I come from Israel and live there. I love it. It's my home. But what's happening now is atrocious and horrific in a scale that unimaginable. I know. That many, it's okay, you can go if you don't want politics. Politics is part of life. Every day.
Yes.
I know that many of us feel completely hopeless in front of this. Innocent Palestinians being killed in thousands. Displaced again and again, without hospitals, without schools, not knowing when the next meal is. Israeli hostages are kept in inhuman conditions for 2 years. And political prisoners are languishing in Israeli jails. Israelis, Jews and Palestinians. You will let me finish and then you can curse me all your life. No problem. Israelis, Jews and Palestinians, we are not able to stop this alone. I ask you, I beg you, all, to do whatever is in your power to stop this madness. Every little action counts while governments hesitate and wait. We cannot let this go on any longer. Every moment that passes puts the safety of millions at risk. Thank you.
You are listening to This Week in Palestine, Truth and Justice Radio. I stand in full solidarity with every soul aboard the global Samud flotilla, activists, journalists, lawmakers, and veterans who bravely sailed to break the siege on Gaza, knowing the risks and refusing to be silent. Their mission was clear: to deliver symbolic aid and to challenge the blockade that has strangled Gaza for nearly 2 decades. And for that courage, Israel arrested 461 people from 47 countries, including Sweden, climate activist Greta Thunberg and 12 other citizens, South Africa, Nkosi Zwelivelele Mandela, grandson of Nelson Mandela, and 6 other citizens, Spain, former Barcelona mayor Ada Colau, and 48 other citizens, Brazil, activist Tiago Avila, and 13 other citizens, Italy, at least 43 citizens already deported. Turkey, 38 citizens detained, prompting a criminal investigation by Turkish prosecutors. United States, military veteran Greg Stoker aboard the Owela, and 19 other citizens. Algeria, 17 citizens. New Zealand, 3 citizens. Argentina,
3 citizens. Australia, 5 citizens. Austria, 4 citizens. Bahrain, 2 citizens. Belgium, 4 citizens. Bulgaria, 1 citizen. Colombia, 2 citizens. Croatia, 1 citizen. Czechia, 1 citizen. Denmark, 1 citizen. Finland, 6 citizens. Ireland, 16 citizens. Japan, 1 citizen. Jordan, 3 citizens. Kuwait, 3 citizens. Netherlands, 9 citizens. Norway, 5 citizens. Pakistan, 1 citizen. Lithuania, 1 citizen. Luxembourg, 1 citizen. Malaysia, 22 citizens. Mauritania, 1 citizen. Switzerland, 19 citizens. Mexico, 7 citizens. Morocco, 6 citizens. Tunisia, 25 citizens. Greece, 26 citizens. France, 33 citizens. Germany, 13 citizens. Poland, 3 citizens. Portugal, 4 citizens. Serbia, 1 citizen. Slovakia, 1 citizen. Canada, citizens confirmed but exact number unknown. United Kingdom, 14 citizens. Uruguay, 2 citizens. Others, activists and journalists among the detained. These boats were intercepted in international waters, some attacked by drones, others rammed or sprayed with water cannons. Communications were jammed, journalists were arrested, and yet the flotilla kept sailing until the final vessel, the Polish-flagged Marinette, was seized on October 3rd. This was not a provocation. It was a humanitarian act. And the response? Military force, mass arrests and deportations reveals the desperation of a state trying to silence global conscience. To every person aboard those boats, your courage echoes far beyond the sea. You carried not just aid, but truth, and I stand with you.
Lastly, beyond standing in full solidarity with every person who chooses what is right, who faces the challenges ahead without fear, and is willing to pay the price for justice, I also salute every voice that speaks boldly, that refuses to be silenced, and that corners corruption with truth. I salute Tucker Carlson for directly confronting Senator Ted Cruz, pressing him on the influence of AIPAC over members of Congress. In a political climate where evasion is the norm and hard questions are avoided, Carlson asked what others won't. How deep does the lobby's grip go, and at what cost to American integrity? By putting Cruz on the spot, Carlson exposed a reality that has long lingered in the shadows, a truth whispered in activist circles but rarely addressed in mainstream media. That truth is this: unquestioned loyalty to AIPAC often overrides accountability, transparency, and the democratic will of the people. Carlson's challenge was not just a moment of journalism, it was a moment of reckoning. We need more voices like his, voices that challenge power, not echo it, voices that stand against corruption, against political puppetry, and against the silencing of Palestinian suffering. In that moment, Carlson stood with Palestine, not with slogans,
but with courage. There are hundreds of free voices, journalists, creators, activists, who speak truth and stand with the Palestinian people every day. I urge you, support them, follow their work, subscribe to their pages, share their content with your friends and family, amplify their message. Because while Israel and Zionist institutions work tirelessly to buy influence and control social media platforms, our collective voice is stronger, truth is louder, and solidarity is unstoppable. Let us stand together for justice, for Palestine, and for every voice that refuses to be bought.
Now let's shift to the so-called ceasefire deal, crafted by Trump in coordination with Netanyahu, after Trump assured Arab leaders he would bring an end to the war. What unfolded was not diplomacy. It was coercion dressed as negotiation. When a leader makes promises to the world and then turns around to follow Netanyahu's directives, it's not leadership, it's submission. What Trump offered the Palestinians wasn't peace, it was a cruel ultimatum. Die slowly or die quickly. A ceasefire in name only, designed to serve Israeli interests while demanding Palestinian surrender. No justice, no dignity, no protection. Just a repackaged threat. And then came the deadline. Last night, Saturday, 6 p.m. Washington, D.C. time. A ticking clock, not toward peace, but toward escalation. Trump warned that if his deal wasn't accepted, Gaza would face hell. But let's be clear, Gaza already knows hell. Gaza has lived through it, bombed hospitals, starving families, mass graves, and children pulled from rubble. What more can be done to a people who have already endured the unimaginable? This isn't just political theater. It's a moral collapse. A ceasefire should mean the end of violence, the beginning of accountability, and a restoration of life. Instead, this deal was a threat wrapped in arrogance. It treated Palestinians not as human beings with rights, but as obstacles to be managed, silenced, or erased. Rest assured, Mr. Trump, the people of Gaza do not fear your deadlines. They have faced tanks, drones, and siege. They have buried their loved ones and will rebuild their homes with bare hands. What they seek is not your permission to live. It is the world's recognition of their right to exist. And to the Arab leaders who were promised peace, what you were handed was a bluff. A deal that serves occupation, not liberation. The question now is not whether Trump's deal will be accepted. The question is whether the world will finally reject the politics of blackmail and stand with the people of Gaza, not as pawns, but as partners in justice. Let us call this what it is, not a peace deal, but a threat, not a ceasefire, but a test of global conscience. And Gaza, as always, is the front line of that test. Let's turn now to this clip from Kim Iverson, where she exposes how Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu undermined the announced ceasefire deal before even leaving American soil. It's a stunning display, not just of political maneuvering, but of blatant disregard. What kind of respect is that for the American people? For President Trump, who publicly promised Arab leaders that he would end the war? To pledge peace in front of cameras, then sabotage the deal behind closed doors? It's not diplomacy, it's deception. Netanyahu's actions raise serious questions. Who's really calling the shots? And how long will U.S. leadership allow itself to be used as a mouthpiece while the reality on the ground in Gaza continues to deteriorate?
Let's listen closely to what Kim Iverson reveals, because behind every handshake and headline, there's a deeper truth, and it's time we face it.
Netanyahu and Trump met at the White House, where they have unveiled a plan for Gaza, essentially a peace proposal. I think this is more than just a ceasefire, is how it's being touted, but it's actually a peace plan. Let's go over what the peace plan is. These two, hold on, let me just show you these two getting together. Oh yeah, there they are, talking, doing things. Netanyahu refused to take questions. Trump said, do you want to take some questions? And Netanyahu was like, he literally did that. And then he says, no, questions later. We'll take questions later. So basically he can only take scripted questions from friendly reporters, even though Trump said, how about a friendly reporter? You want to take a question from a friendly reporter? And Netanyahu was like, no time for questions. We'll do that another time. All right, let's go over the peace plan. And is this legitimate? Is this real? Supposedly Netanyahu and Israel have agreed to this peace plan. That's what they're claiming. That is not true. They haven't really totally agreed to this. Netanyahu is balking on this. He is saying in Hebrew different things to his people in Israel than he's saying here to the United States and in English. But let's go over the plan and see if it's any good. Hamas has yet to accept the deal. They said they just received it recently, so they haven't even had a chance to really discuss it. But pretty much a lot of nations are on board with this. The West is on board with this. These are the European nations. The Arab nations are on board with this. Everybody's on board with this, except Israel, of course, even though Israel claims to be for it. But here's the plan. The full text of the proposal. It's kind of long, but let's go over it. Gaza will be de-radicalized, terror-free, a terror-free zone that does not pose a threat to its neighbors. I don't know what that means, but that's what it's saying. Gaza will be redeveloped for the benefit of the people of Gaza, who have suffered more than enough. Okay, that's good, because originally Trump had this plan of redeveloping it as like some international zone. If both sides agree to this proposal, the war will immediately end. Israeli forces will withdraw to the agreed upon line to prepare for a hostage release. During this time, all military operations, including aerial and artillery bombardment, will be suspended, and battle lines will remain frozen until conditions are met for the complete staged withdrawal. Within 72 hours of Israel publicly accepting this agreement, all hostages alive and deceased will be returned. Once all hostages are released, Israel will release 250 life sentence prisoners, plus 1,700 Gazans who were detained after October 7th, including all women and children detained in that context. We never hear about that group, right? They're only talking about our hostages. We want our hostages back. And the Palestinians have 1,700 hostages held by the Israelis. The Israelis are talking about a couple hundred at the peak of hostages now, maybe a couple of dozen. Meanwhile, they're holding 1,700, including women and children. Why isn't that ever in the news? For every Israeli hostage whose remains are released, Israel will release the remains of 15 deceased Gazans. Why not release all the, why not? What harm is it in releasing the dead remains, right? Why hold on to, so why is it for every one Israeli hostage remain, you're gonna give 15? Why don't you all just say, you're going to give us all of our dead and we're going to give you all of your dead. Once all the hostages are returned, Hamas members who commit to peaceful coexistence and to decommission their weapons will be given amnesty. Members of Hamas who wish to leave Gaza will be provided safe passage to receiving countries. Upon acceptance of this agreement, full aid will be immediately sent into the Gaza Strip. At minimum, aid quantities will be consistent with what was included in the 19 January 2025 agreement regarding humanitarian aid, including rehabilitation of infrastructure, which is water, electricity, sewage, rehabilitation of hospitals and bakeries, and entry of necessary equipment to remove rubble and open roads. Okay, that's good. Entry of distribution and aid in the Gaza Strip will proceed without interference from the two parties through the United Nations and its agencies, the Red Crescent, in addition to other international institutions not associated in any manner with either party. Opening the Rafah crossing in both directions will be subject to the same mechanism implemented under the 19th of January 2025 agreement. Okay. Gaza will be governed under the temporary transitional governance of a technocratic, apolitical Palestinian committee responsible for delivering the day-to-day running of public services and municipalities for the people in Gaza. This committee will be made up of qualified Palestinians and international experts with oversight and supervision by a new international transitional body, the Board of Peace, which will be headed and chaired by President Donald J. Trump, with other members and heads of state to be announced, including former Prime Minister Tony Blair. I mean, the guy that marched us into Iraq, that guy. This body will set the framework and handle the funding for the redevelopment of Gaza until such time as the Palestinian Authority has completed its reform program, as outlined in various proposals, including President Trump's peace plan in the 2020 and Saudi-French proposal, and can securely and effectively take back control of Gaza. This body will call on best international standards to create modern and efficient governance that serves the people of Gaza, and it's conducive to attracting investment. All right, let's break that down in plain English. So Tony Blair is the guy that is marching in the digital ID into the UK. He's heavily involved in the WEF. He was slated for potentially taking over for Klaus Schwab. He's very, very big on spying on everybody. Spy on everybody, see what everybody's doing, and then we can control everybody. That's his big, what he's into. So now they're appointing him to be somebody who's in charge of this new transitional governance of a technocratic Palestinian committee. So they're basically going to unleash complete and total surveillance on the Palestinians. They're going to basically use them as a testing ground for everything they're going to do to us. That's what they're going to do. They're going to try it on them first. And they're going to say, well, you have no choice. And people are going to go along with it because they're going to say, well, you're a bunch of terrorists. So obviously we have to spy on you. Obviously we have to keep an eye on you. Obviously we have to know what your every move is because you're a bunch of terrorists. So that is always, always in the name of safety. That is always the excuse for unleashing this type of big brother surveillance. You will own nothing and you will be happy. You won't even own your own self. You won't even own your own privacy. You won't even own that. You won't even own that. Mm-mm. So that's the plan. They're going to use them as a testing ground for all the surveillance that the Israelis have created, that they then want to sell to everywhere in the world. So everybody should be really, really leery of that aspect of this. Even if you are totally against the Palestinians and you think that they're all terrorists, you should be still very against this because it will come back to bite you in the ass. It sure will. A Trump economic development plan to rebuild and energize Gaza will be created by convening a panel of experts who have helped birth some of the thriving modern miracle cities in the Middle East. Many thoughtful investment proposals and exciting development ideas have been crafted by well-meaning international groups and will be considered to synthesize the security and governance frameworks to attract and facilitate these investments that will create jobs, opportunity, and hope for future Gaza. Right. So they're saying, we'll do all of this great, amazing, modern infrastructure for you, which is going to include security, which is the big brother surveillance. So we're going to do all of this amazing stuff. You're going to be living basically in this futuristic city, these like 15-minute cities. That's going to be you, Gaza. And you're going to be totally surveilled while you're doing it. A special economic zone will be established with preferred tariff and access rates to be negotiated with participating countries. So this is where it gets appealing to the Palestinians and why they might agree to this. No one will be forced to leave Gaza. And those who wish to leave will be free to do so and free to return. We will encourage people to stay and offer them the opportunity to build a better Gaza. So that's good. That is why so many of the Arab states are saying, let's keep this deal. That's why so many of the Europeans are saying, let's keep this deal. This is a good deal because they're saying no one will be ethnically cleansed. We will stop the ethnic cleansing and we'll encourage you to stay and you can come and go. Hamas and other factions agree to not have any role in the governance of Gaza, directly, indirectly, or in any form. Yeah, because they're not going to have a government at all. They've already said that they're just going to have this kind of committee of Palestinians who are going to ensure that things get distributed, like aid and medicines, and that things run and function, but there will be no political government whatsoever. They're saying all military terror and offensive infrastructure, including tunnels and weapon production facilities, will be destroyed and not rebuilt. There'll be a process of demilitarization of Gaza under the supervision of independent monitors, which will include placing weapons permanently beyond use through an agreed process of decommissioning and supported by an internationally funded buyback and reintegration program, all verified by the independent monitors. New Gaza will be fully committed to building a prosperous economy and a peaceful coexistence with their neighbors. A guarantee will be provided by regional partners to ensure that Hamas and the factions comply with their obligations and that New Gaza poses no threat to its neighbors or its people. So a guarantee will be provided to the regional partners, and that will be in the form of a big surveillance apparatus. The United States will work with Arab and international partners to develop a temporary international stabilization force to immediately deploy in Gaza. The ISF will train and provide support to vetted Palestinian police forces in Gaza and will consult with Jordan and Egypt, who have extensive experience in this field. This force will be a long-term internal security solution. So that's who's going to be doing the policing, is this international stabilization force that is going to be, you know, a bunch of Arabs from other nations coming in and doing that. Israel will not occupy or annex Gaza. As the ISF establishes control and stability, the IDF will withdraw based on standards, milestones, and timeframes linked to demilitarization that will be agreed upon between the IDF, ISF, and the guarantors and the United States, with the objective of a secure Gaza that no longer poses a threat to Israel, Egypt, or its citizens. Practically, the IDF will progressively hand over the Gaza territory it occupies to the ISF according to an agreement that they will make with the transitional authority until they are withdrawn completely from Gaza, save for a security perimeter presence that will remain until Gaza is properly secure from any resurgent terror threat. So they have to give it back. The Israelis have to give it back. In the event Hamas delays or rejects this proposal, the above, including the scaled-up aid operation, will proceed in the terror-free areas handed over from the IDF to the ISF. An interfaith dialogue process will be established based on the values of tolerance and peaceful coexistence to try and change mindsets and narratives of Palestinians and Israelis by emphasizing the benefits that can be derived from peace. Okay, that's and Israelis have to have this dialogue of tolerance and peaceful coexistence. While Gaza redevelopment advances and when the PA reform program is faithfully carried out, the conditions may finally be in place for a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood, which we recognize as the aspiration of the Palestinian people. The United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence. Okay, all of this sounds pretty good, minus the big old surveillance apparatus that they're going to stick on the Palestinians. But I don't think it's worth, I mean, what else are they going to do? You know, I think they have to accept this deal. I think they will accept this deal. I don't think there's any reason for them not to accept this deal. The big security apparatus is going to be on them. It's going to be looming. I think that's more of a problem for the rest of us than it is going to be for them. I think when you're living in a place like Gaza, you're not so worried about the surveillance state. You're worried about feeding your children. You're worried about disease and famine. You're worried about being killed by the Israelis. These are the things you're worried about. These are like your first priority problem. And then when you have those things and those things are secure, people start to worry about other things. Their futures, economics, retirement. Once they have that stuff, you know, and their children's futures, once they have that stuff secured, that's kind of second level. Then you start to worry about things like how safe is your neighborhood, crime, those types of things definitely around you. When you have that safe and secure, then you start to worry more about the government's big brother and surveillance, which is the fortunate position many of us are in this country, in the United States. We're fortunate enough to be like, look, the thing that I'm worried about, the rest of my life is okay. I'm worried about high gas prices, high grocery, and I'm worried about the government overstepping its bounds. These are the things I worry about. But if you're a Gazan, that is really low on your list. You got a lot of other priorities first. So I think they're going to be accepting this deal, but I just don't think Netanyahu is necessarily going to be accepting this deal. But first, before we get to his response and what he's been saying in Hebrew to all of the Israelis behind Donald Trump's back, although, you know, Donald Trump can watch it for himself. But the reaction from the Arabs, this is a joint statement by the foreign ministers of Qatar, Jordan, the UAE, Indonesia, Pakistan, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Egypt. They welcome the sincere efforts to end the war. And they say that they emphasize the importance of partnership with the United States in securing peace. And the ministers welcome the announcement by President Trump regarding his proposal to end the war, rebuild Gaza, prevent the displacement of the Palestinian people, and advance a comprehensive peace, as well as his announcement that he will not allow the annexation of the West Bank. So yeah, I mean, Trump is basically saying you're not going to get Gaza, you can't annex the West Bank. Now, the Israelis aren't listening. They're building settlements in the West Bank anyway, effectively annexing it without technically annexing it. And that should be the next step that really is stopped. I mean, if they really want to end this and they really want peace, they are going to have to tell all of the settlements in the West Bank that they got to get the hell out of there, that they're going to have to evacuate, they need to leave, or they can stay, but they're living in Palestinian territory under the Palestinian Authority, and that's that they live in Palestinian land. It's not Israeli land. One of the two. That's fine. They could do that. There's Palestinians living in Israel. There can be Israelis living in Palestine, but it needs to be considered Palestine, a state of Palestine, and if the Israelis want to stay, they need to understand that they're living in a new government. They're living in a different country. That is just a reality they have to face. But Israel, this is what Israel's saying. Hamas has yet to agree to the Gaza plan, but that is not Netanyahu's only problem. Okay, well, what is Netanyahu's problem? It says that to move forward, the prime minister will need to convince his ministers that his acceptance of the American proposal is merely lip service meant to buy time and secure political maneuvering. What a weasel. I mean, that is what I could say about what a weasel. I mean, this is the reality of the situation. And let me show you why this guy is such a weasel, because he even says this in Hebrew. He hasn't even left American soil. And he still, oh, don't worry, you know, this is going to be great, because first, let me play for you this is a Trump saying, like, and if Hamas doesn't accept the deal, this is important. You have to listen to this clip first, because he says, if Hamas doesn't accept the deal, then I'm going to let Israel blow the place to smithereens and keep marching forward. And Israel then, Netanyahu uses that to say, yeah, see, that's what we're actually looking for. Watch this.
If they're unable to do so, then Israel would have the absolute right, and actually our full backing, U.S. full backing. Marco's here, and a lot of our leaders are here, our great vice president, Susie Wiles, Steve Witkoff, Jared Kushner. They've been so involved in this process. I don't think anybody else could have done it or even come close, but it's we're right there. We're right there. First time in thousands of years, I think you can probably say, if you really look into it, if you study back, if you're a scholar, you would say thousands of years, Israel would have my full backing to finish the job of destroying the threat of Hamas. But I hope that we're going to have a deal for peace. And if Hamas rejects the deal, which is always possible, they're the only one left. Everyone else has accepted it. But I have a feeling that we're going to have a positive answer. But if not, as you know, Bibi, you'd have our full backing to do what you would have to do. Everyone understands that the ultimate result must be the elimination of any danger posed in the region, and that danger is caused by Hamas. The tyranny of terror has to end, and this is, again, something that we're looking for. This is eternity. This is for forever.
Okay, except it isn't for the Israelis. And Netanyahu, the little snaky weasel, is not actually going along with this. He has made that clear behind closed doors to the Israelis. This is just lip service. This is being reported on in practically every newspaper in Israel, that this is just lip service from Netanyahu, that he's just buying time, that he's not agreeing to this. He's fought too hard to lose now and to allow the Palestinians to have Gaza. That's for the Israelis. They're supposed to be keeping it. This is what Netanyahu had to say before he even left American soil. He basically says, don't worry. This is all just, don't worry about
Prime
this
Minister,
here.
How do you summarize the visit?
It was an excellent visit. Huh?
We've translated this using AI into English so that you can understand what he's saying. But this video originally is in Hebrew, but we've just used AI to dub over his voice in English so we can all understand.
Both the start at the UN and the conclusion in Washington. This is my fourth visit to Washington since President Trump began. This is a historic visit. Instead of Hamas isolating us, we turned the tables and isolated Hamas. Now the whole world, including the Arab and Muslim world, is pressuring Hamas to accept the conditions we set together with President Trump, to release all our captives, both alive and deceased, while the IDF remains in most of the strip.
Now, who would have believed it? After all, they always say you must accept Hamas's conditions, release everyone. The IDF needs to withdraw and Hamas can recover and also rehabilitate the strip. No, it is not happening. On the contrary, President Trump added that if Hamas refuses, he will give full support to Israel to complete the military action and eliminate it. Therefore,
there it is.
I think from every angle, it was an excellent visit.
Oh, from every angle, it was an excellent visit, because let's just listen to him say that again. Like, no way. The IDF should withdraw,
and
he says. Hamas can recover.
And also rehabilitate the strip.
No way. That's not happening. Wait a minute. That is literally the plan that Donald Trump put out there. He literally put this as the plan. The IDF will withdraw and they're going to rehabilitate the strip. And all of these Arab nations have said, sounds good. The European nations have said, sounds good. And now here's Netanyahu. He comes out and in Hebrew, he says, no way, not happening.
On the contrary, President Trump added that if Hamas refuses, he will give full support to Israel to complete the military action and eliminate it. Therefore, I think from every angle, it was an excellent visit.
Prime Minister.
A weasel. What a weasel. What a weasel. So how is he going to get Hamas to not accept the deal? Well, you know, what they usually do, which is they get them to accept it and then they start blowing things up and they start going, the Israelis start sabotaging the deal to make it to where Hamas says, wait a minute, they're not following through with the deal. And then when Hamas says, well, then we're not going to follow through with the deal, if they're not following through with the deal, then the Israelis could say, see, they didn't follow through with the deal, even though it was them who originally didn't.
The question being asked is whether you agree to a Palestinian state.
Absolutely not. It's also not written in the agreement. But one thing we did say, that we will strongly oppose a Palestinian state. President Trump also said this. He said he understands this. He also said at the United Nations that it would be a huge reward for terrorism and a danger to the state of Israel. And of course, we do not agree.
Thank you very much, Prime Minister.
What a weasel. I just cannot stand this guy. This guy is evil. I mean, really, there's no other way to categorize him. He's evil. He's an evil demon, pretty sure. For him to no Palestinian state, then what is the plan for the Palestinians? If it's not a state, and if you want true peace, who's blocking peace now? It's not even just who's blocking peace now. It's who's always been blocking peace. It has been the Israelis. And it's not just, oh, well, October 7th happened, and that's why they can't have a Palestinian state. Well, what about before October 7th? Why were you denying them a Palestinian state for 75 years? What was your reasoning then before October 7th? Now you're hanging everything on October 7th, because a lot of Americans are a bunch of idiots that'll actually just gobble that up rather than looking back at the 75 years prior and wondering, well, what happened then? Why weren't you giving them a state then? And this is the plan. The plan is just to deny them a state, to continue taking the land, to continue going back on deals, and then blaming it on them, lying, lying, lying. And the world is aware, and the world has had enough. So yeah, the world is going to back this deal, and Hamas will accept this deal. And the Israelis absolutely will go against this deal and turn around and blame it on Hamas. They will stage an attack. They will do whatever it takes in order to blame this on Hamas and not go through with this deal, because this weasel has done it every single time. And he's just flat out saying it. He hasn't even left Washington. And he's saying this in Hebrew. But he doesn't, this guy, he doesn't care. He doesn't care. He knows that he controls Trump. He absolutely controls Trump. He says he doesn't. This was him going on Fox News and kind of doing that after the news came out that he was going around. Tucker Carlson said that he was going around bragging to people in Israel that he controls Trump. So, of course, he has to run interference. He has to come to American media and say, I don't really control Donald Trump.
President Trump has been an incredible ally of Israel, incredible friend. We've had no one like him. What he did in his first term in recognizing Jerusalem as our capital, moving the American embassy there, recognizing our sovereignty over the Golan Heights, getting out of the disastrous Iran deal. And then, of course, now joining us in the effort to prevent Iran from getting nuclear weapons by taking out some of these nuclear sites with us, I think it's great. I read somewhere this ridiculous lie. President Trump does what he does because he decides what's in America's best interest. And I've said this often, you know, I don't decide a thing for President Trump.
Really? Because you just gave us a laundry list of all of it. It was your dream laundry list. And Trump literally did every single one of those, of your dream laundry list. You haven't been able to get a single other president to this. Everybody was worried that Trump was controlled by Russia. He's controlled by Israel.
He is the most independent leader, an amazing leader that I've seen in all my years. And I think many people in the world see that. So the idea that I, in any ways that I boast that I control him, that's ridiculous. It's a lie. And I never, not only did I not say it, I don't think it. I think America's blessed with a very strong and independent leader.
Oh, yeah, right. Of course you're going to say that. You want to keep him in charge because you're controlling him. He's your little puppy, and he does whatever you say. And Trump is now trying to not allow that by saying, you're not going to annex the West Bank. Here's a deal that gives Gaza back to the Gazans. And Netanyahu's scoffing and saying, never going to happen. He put this other provision in the deal that if Hamas doesn't accept it, we can blow the place to smithereens and take it for ourselves. And we're going to do that. And there's never going to be a Palestinian state. And oh, but it's the Palestinians who don't want peace. It's their fault. It's all their fault. They're the ones who don't want peace. No, it's this murderous, genocidal weasel who doesn't want peace at all. And he's sitting on American soil and boasting that basically the peace deal Trump just put out there, a peace deal he's proud of, is not really going to happen. I mean, that's where Bibi is on this. And he, by the way, wants you to remember, you good Christian, you, this one thing.
Remember October 7th. And we do. We will never forget the horrors of October 7th. And we will do whatever is necessary to make sure they don't happen again. Since October 7th,
Israel's enemies have learned a hard truth. Those who attack us pay a heavy price, but those who partner with us advance progress and security for their peoples. President Trump just said it. It's also in the Bible. It says, those who will bless you will be blessed, and those who will curse you will be cursed. And that's actually what is happening. We want the blessings. I think we've done a lot in the past 2 years to end the curse. We're not finished, but we've done a lot.
Okay, many theologians point out that these promises were made to Abraham and his lineage, later known as Israel, and the blessings ultimately extend to all nations through Abraham's descendants. That would be all the Arabs, all the Arab nations, all of those in the Middle East. And I think it is fair to say that it's been pretty accurate. That prophecy's been accurate so far. Netanyahu has a very narrow definition of Israel. The theologians say, actually, Israel is all 12 tribes of Israel, not just the two tribes, but the 10 tribes who were absorbed into all of these other countries and cultures and became other people who do not identify as Jewish. That means the vast majority of the tribes of Israel do not identify as Jewish, 10 versus 2, do the math. And those who curse Israel will be cursed. Those who bless Israel will be blessed. And what has the United States done? The United States has attacked the Middle East over and over and over in endless wars for decades and for decades. And I think the United States has been cursed for it. We have not, we are barely surviving. Our country is tearing each other apart. We're more divided than we've ever been. We're losing our dominance in the world. Ever since we decided to march into the Middle East and start wars and curse the descendants of Israel, which would be all 12 tribes, that means those Arab Muslims or the descendants of Israel, we have been cursed. So Netanyahu's right. He's just got an extremely narrow, small minority definition of who the Israelis, the biblical Israelis, actually are. But of course, Trump reiterates this as well.
History has shown us that those who have relations with Israel have thrived, while those who have devoted resources and attention toward the destruction and even annihilation of Israel have languished. They haven't done well. Israel is not going anywhere. They're going to coexist with other people and countries in the region, from Syria to Lebanon to Saudi Arabia. The promise of a new Middle East is so clearly within our reach. This is the closest we've ever come to real peace, not fake peace, not political fool's peace.
I think, unfortunately, you're the fool. Because, unfortunately, Trump, I think that Netanyahu has made sure of it. He's made sure that your presidency will be remembered as a foolish one. One where you were controlled by the Israelis, where Netanyahu just came and mocked you and laughed at you and agreed with you and nodded his head and then turned around and told everybody in Israel, don't worry, I've got another plan, it's okay. So he's mocking you, he's walking you like a dog. You're the foolish one for continuing to partner with him, continuing to believe him, continuing to think that this is the path to peace. The real fool, unfortunately, is you, President Donald Trump. Thank you for watching this clip from the full Kim Iverson Show, which you can catch Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern at KimIversonShow.com. It is free for you to watch. Again, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern, KimIversonShow.com. See you there.
And that brings us to the close of today's episode of This Week in Palestine. As always, stay curious, stay courageous, and keep asking the questions that unsettle power and move us closer to justice. I'm your host, Yara Rashid, and it's been a deep honor to share this space with you, a space where truth is spoken without compromise, resistance is honored without apology, and solidarity is never up for negotiation. If you have thoughts, questions, or want to support the work we do, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out anytime at twippodcasts@gmail.com. A heartfelt thank you to you, our listeners, and to the brilliant team behind the show who make this show possible. With deep gratitude to Bob Funk, Stanley Robinson, Stephen Lowe, Sophia Rose Woolman, Tahani Abu Musa, Dr. Rana Awad,
Dr. Bethany Marks, Juliet Salame Olivier, Renaud Al-Ghul, and Mohammed Al-Ghul. Your vision, labor, and spirit keep this platform alive and beating. Until next time, keep walking toward truth. Keep walking toward Palestine. This Week in Palestine is a production of Truth and Justice Radio, proudly broadcasting from WZBC Student Radio at Boston College. Thank you for walking this path with us. We'll be back next week. Until then, take care and stay steadfast.